So hi, my name is Alexis. I'm here today to talk about some kind of fun projects. To introduce myself a bit more, I am working at Bootlin, similarly to Luca. I enjoy doing embedded stuff, obviously. I mostly work with embedded Linux platforms. I'm doing kernel developments. My company is kind of focused on all these kind of things, and especially on upstreaming and using open source. And so when I'm not working on those embedded Linux things, I also do a bit of hacking on some other platforms. And so that's actually what I want to talk to you about today. So the project I want to talk about is a kind of game that I have developed with a few friends. And this is a blind test game. So it comes with a set of hardware. And the concept is pretty simple. There's a song playing. You have to guess the song. And to be able to compete, you have some physical buzzers. So this is this kind of button here. This is handmade with some custom electronics, software, and all. You have a web interface. Everyone has its own score on the screen. You have the music playing, a countdown, and everything. So we have developed this kind of thing with some friends. It works. We have a working implementation. And this is a nice kind of project to have a little sandbox to play with some other technologies, and especially with this buzzer thing. So what I'm calling buzzer is really the physical button here. And this one is really simple. In the end, this is an ESP32, those inexpensive chips with some Wi-Fi in there. And I have a few peripherals to use. I have a buzzer button. This is basically a button that I have to detect. Some LED and some Wi-Fi connection to what I'm calling an NBC here. This is a controller acting as an access point. This is nothing more than a Raspberry Pi. And so the goal of this project here for this part is to create the whole firmware for this button to connect to this controller and notify the controller about any time someone presses the button so that the player can play. So, as I mentioned, there is already a working implementation. We've been playing with friends, with colleagues even. And here the challenge is to rewrite this. It is written in C. And since the firmware is kind of small, it is perfectly fine to take some time to rewrite it in Rust and to experiment in Rust. But more specifically, in NoSTD Rust. As I am doing some embedded Linux, I am more interested in NoSTD here. That means that I won't have all the fancy tools and types that I have with the standard Rust library. So that's what I've been doing in the recent weeks. I have now a working implementation again, but with Rust. And I'm here today just to let you know about my feedback. Where did I struggle? What did work well? What did not? And just a bit of disclaimer, this won't fix all the bugs in the firmware. This won't make it blazingly fast. This is not the goal here. This is mostly about learning some Rust and playing with Rust. All right, so let's do it. The first step is to switch from our C environment to a ready-to-work Rust environment. And this is pretty simple. Before doing that, I need to know what I need to write my firmware. Here, the main feature is to be able to use some peripherals on the platform and to use the Wi-Fi interface embedded in the chip. To do that, we have an ecosystem ready to use, an open source one. This is ESP-HL, maintained by Espressif, if I'm not wrong. And in there, more specifically, we have ESP radio. This is the one which will let us use the Wi-Fi stack in the chip. It comes with a few constraints, obviously. To be able to use this ESP radio stack, we need ESP-HL, but we need it with some specific features which are considered unstable. So that's a few things that we have to enable in our project configuration. We need some alloc crate. I have mentioned NoSTD. We are already bringing in some alloc, but we need it to be able to use some Wi-Fi. We need the ESP Atos glue and so on. And while we are at it, let's bring some other crates, for example, to be able to write some async code. And in this case, I brought Embassy because this is pretty well supported with ESP-HL. And so I will be able to split all my architecture between different tasks, for example. So let's start with that. We need to bring up our environment. This is pretty straightforward. I have to install the Rust toolchain with RustUp. From there, I can install this ESP generate tool. This is a template tool that will just create the basic skeleton for your project. It is highly configurable. You can decide to bring Embassy or not, to bring ALOC or not. You can even do something very minimal without even using Wi-Fi with this. It will generate everything. You can switch to this directory, and bam, you are ready to run some code. What does it look like? So I've taken the basic example generated by this ESP generate. I won't focus too much about the details on all the code I will show. It would be way too long. But basically here, we already have a main task here, which is receiving a spawner. From this spawner, I will be able to spawn all my tasks in my code. We have a few NoSTD details here. We see on top NoSTD. We are asking not to search for a main function. We have some specific linking to perform. This is already handled for us. And in our main task, we start getting a handle on the peripheral. So this is some nice Rust abstraction to have a singleton on all the big mutable hardware we have on our platform. Some basic initialization. We see some example about manipulating Wi-Fi. And then some infinite loop in which we start seeing some await syntax. So that's why, that's how I will be playing with async code. Before diving into the implementation, just a word about Embassy. So what's exactly Embassy? This is a runtime, an async runtime. When you want to perform some async code, you need a runtime, providing, for example, an executor. So Embassy is one of those. And it comes with a few attributes here that allows me to declare some functions as tasks. And so those tasks will be able to run concurrently to my main function, for example. And so I will be able to write concurrent code. And so, for example, here I have a dummy task which will print a message every 5 seconds while the rest of the code is running. All of this is cooperative scheduling. All right, we have the basic tooling. We can start implementing things. The very first thing I want to do is to make sure that my button, my buzzer, is able to connect to my controller, the NBC thing acting as a Wi-Fi access point. And to do that, let's not dig too much into the code, but basically I can retrieve some Wi-Fi objects. I can declare a configuration in which I will set some SSID password. And then I have some API to wait for the connection. First, wait for the controller to be started, and then wait for the connection. You see that here I am already moving all of this into a dedicated task. So I can define a task that will handle the monitoring of my Wi-Fi connection. I have also this small task here that is kind of mandatory. I am using Embassy Net, which is a stack providing TCP, for example. And so I need something to run the stack in a dedicated task. So that's why I have this net task on top. On the main function, I can start spawning my tasks. So you see that I received this spawner here, and I am using it to start my tasks, so my Wi-Fi task, my EmbassyNet stack task, and so on. And in the main task, I can wait for the connection task to have finished this job. So for example, waiting to have received an IPv4 configuration. All right, simple, and we are connected. Is it? Maybe not. Why that? The first time I tried to run this kind of code, it crashed miserably and systematically. And things were quite weird because we have a panic message pointing and some ESP ROM sys, whatever it means, function called via syscall table not implemented, and a kind of broken backtrace. And the weird thing is that it happens systematically, but it happens only when I try to connect the button to my custom access point. If I try to connect it to my ISP router, for example, at home, it works. So fortunately for this, it is reproducible with the basic ESP-HAL example. That's a test worth doing because maybe I've done something stupid in my code. But here, no, I can reproduce it with some basic example. So the next logic thing to do is to call for help in ESP-HAL GitHub. So I have started feeling a bug, giving as many details as I could. And I've started discussing with who I assume to be expressive employees, people maintaining this ESP-HAL crate. And we did a few back and forth, and it allowed me to understand a few things about this ESP chip that I did not get at all. This is what's happening. I have my custom firmware in the flash. I have some ROM code. And what happened is that from time to time, my firmware is calling into some ROM code function. That's not outstanding. That's something that's perfectly fine in embedded systems. That happens. I suspect that this is done for some Wi-Fi features from the Wi-Fi stack. But the thing I did not suspect is that the ROM code can also call some functions into my flash. And this is things. This is where things will go wrong. This is kind of smart. If you do not provide a syscall table to the ROM code, it should fall back to some default things. But there was a table defined in ESPHL, and this table was not filled. There were some entries in there that just caused a straight panic. So that's the panic message we have seen. So after understanding things, after doing a few tests on my own, but not understanding a thing about what I was writing, I've let the adults do the code and make some commits. And so they have implemented get reent in this syscall table, malloc reentrant, free reentrant. And from there, finally, my buzzer is able to connect to my custom access point. So if one of you has this GitHub handle, I owe you a beer. Thank you. OK, so we have basic wireless connection. Unfortunately, this is fixed on the main branch on ESPHL. ESPHL has not been released yet with those fixes. But fortunately, Cargo is able to handle that. So you can open your cargo.toml, create this patch.crates.io thingy here, and you set some specific remotes. And once your crates have been updated upstream, you can get rid of this. All right, we have a Wi-Fi connection working. I have a small TCP server running on my controller. This is actually a WebSocket server. So let's try to connect to this server. I am using the EmbassyNet crate. This one provides objects like TCP sockets, which are very useful. So I can create this TCP socket, set some timeout keep alive that will be handled automatically by the stack, set a target, so we have the IP address of my controller here, and try to connect. And then in my main loop, I can check for any data that is coming from the controller, and so on. Pretty easy, right? Is it, once again? We have to split things a bit, and we won't be able to just handle everything in the main task. Why is that? Because we are writing this in Rust, and so we have some ownership to wrestle with. This TCP socket object can be owned by only one task. So what I'm planning to do at this step is to move this socket into a dedicated dedicated task. And if anyone wants somewhere in my firmware to send a message, it can't access directly the socket. It is owned already by another task. So I have to set up this kind of channels thingy between my tasks to exchange commands to send or data and statuses received by the button. So let's try to implement that. I create yet another task, socket task. In there, you see here that as parameters, I'm providing channels. It is, in fact, only one side of a channel that I am providing. The other side will be used by other tasks. And I have a main loop. We see here some nice constructs based on the async framework I am using. I am doing select on two different futures. In fact, all the async functions I am using right now are futures. They return futures. And so I have to poll those futures. And to do that, I can use select, for example, to poll on multiple futures. And by doing that, the first future that will trigger will make the select return, and it will return an either. This either enum, if I remember correctly, will let me know about which future triggered first. So from there, in my task, I am polling both the TCP socket for incoming data and the TX channel in case someone wants to send data through this socket. And then the corresponding code on the main side, if I want to send a message, I use the channel. All right, simple? No. This is where I've started to wrestle with a dark beast called the compiler. If, like me, you are a C developer only seeing Rust from far, this is where you will start having goosebumps because there is some lifetime issues and things like that. It made me scratch my head quite some time. So what's happening basically here? I am moving things between tasks. Some things have reference to other things, and so Rust wants to know about lifetimes of those references to make sure that it is valid. So let's try to navigate in all of this. Here I am being told that I am just missing references. All right, let's try to apply the hint here, applying anonymous lifetimes. So that's this quote underscore thing, and not enough. Now I'm being told, okay, there is a lifetime. The data you are passing to a task must have a static lifetime, which means it must live for all program duration. Fine, I can change the prototype and put static. Not good enough. The objects you are passing are not static. Yeah, obviously, I am creating them in the main task. Okay, so let's create global variables that will live long enough. Not good enough. And from there, I started to stop understanding. We have those phantom data thingy here. I am not strong enough in Rust. But I've searched. I've searched some embassy examples, some ESPHL examples. And apparently, the good thing to do here is to wrap your data structures in some static cells, which will allocate memory for this data at build time. But you can still declare this data, initialize this data at runtime. So this is what is done in this TX init, RX init. And from there, yes, we can compile. We did not even test the code yet. Okay, so we assume to have a working TCP connection. We don't have a buzzer able to send a buzz notification yet. We have to read a button. And fortunately, this one is quite simple. We can benefit from ESPHL. We just need to configure and read a GPIO. And the nice thing here is that it handles everything for us. This wait for falling hedge here, it automatically configures the relevant interrupts, wait for the interrupt, disable the interrupt once it has triggered, and that's it. And from there, I can send a message through a dedicated channel so that it goes through my TCP socket. Well, it's almost straightforward. You have to handle some bouncing on the GPIO, for example. All right, we have a button. We are missing one thing. There is an LED in our button. This LED is useful, for example, to blink in a specific color so that each player can remember about its team. The LED I have chosen, because I had some in my cupboard, is some WS2812. This is not an LED where you just apply a voltage on a pin. This needs a specific serial protocol to be manipulated. And fortunately, on ESP32, we have a specific peripheral called RMT. This one is used for remotes, for TVs, for doors and all. And you can disable modulation on this and use it as a controller for your specific LED protocol. And I do not even have to write it on my own. I can just check on crates.io, find these smart LEDs crates, and it handles everything. Please give me an RMT handle, and then I will give you API to drive your LED. So that's what we are doing here. We are instantiating this RMT peripheral here and feeding it to the crate. Then I have this LED object, and I can use some write traits on it to apply a specific color. Boom, done. All right, we are missing one thing. We need to exchange messages with the controller. We have set up the medium. We need to define the protocol. And here's the protocol is JSON. We exchange JSON message. Anytime there is a buzz, I send a JSON message. Anytime the controller wants to set a color on my button, I receive a JSON message. And so that would be very nice not to have to serialize, deserialize those messages on our own. And that's where Rust is very good. We have this serdecrate here. This is amazing. How does it work? This is a general crate providing traits and a standard serializer, deserializer for famous protocols, JSON, CBOR, CSV, and so on. You can even write your own parser. But you have multiple crates that you can use. You have the main one giving the main traits. You will likely need it anyway. But then you have serdejson, for example, which is the one implementing the actual parser. But here, this one depends on STD. I don't want to write STD code. I don't want to build STD in my firmware. I can somehow disable std in there, but then I need to enable alloc. Sure, we have alloc, but I would like to try without alloc. And so there is this third JSON core that is working without std, without alloc. It is slightly less powerful, but perfectly enough for what I want to do. To use it, cargo add the crates, and this is amazing. I have my JSON on the left. I just have to write the corresponding structs and use the corresponding attributes in my code. So I declare that a pattern can have a type, it can have details. In those details, I have integers, floats, and all. You see here those derived macros here, setting using the macros from CRD. And then when I receive a message on my TCP socket, I just have to use this from slice thing with this nice little turbofish thing saying that I want to deserialize a message LED pattern. And boom, I have a struct. I have all the details of the command inside there. If I want to send a message, I build a structure with the relevant field, and I call it the other way around. To slice, please store it in a buffer, and I can push this buffer into my socket. Final detail, some messages are slightly different, but that would be a shame to redefine my messages just for a small difference. For example, I can ask to switch the LED off. I don't have details in this case. No problem. I can deserialize options in Rust. I am turning my details field here into option. And so when I do from slice, I may or may not have some details. And then it's up to me to perform the relevant behavior on this. So after wrestling with lifetimes and compiler issues, this one was very nice. All right, I even have a few minutes to perform a small demo. I have the buzzer, I have the controller here. I will power up the controller.
I have a button on your t-shirt.
The first demo was nice enough to even make a t-shirt in sync with my talk. That's very nice. So let's plug the controller. So this one will host all the logic for the game, meaning the Wi-Fi access points, the small web server, TCP server, the game interface and all. I will open a console here. I will switch to my project directory. So here I have all my Rust code. The base has been generated with ESP generate. We won't take a look at the code. This is not the interesting part. What I will rather do is take my buzzer here, plug USB-C. So the chip I have selected has USB-C, which is nice. Plug the other end on my computer where I can. So I hope everything is booted. I will type cargo run. So this one will reflash my ESP chip. And it will also start monitoring the logs emitted on the serial line through USB. So that's really useful in there. I will even provide this small ESP log equal my crate to have the debug logs output. So let's do this. No serial. Oh. Brace for the demo effects. OK. So the flash was super fast because it is comparing what is already flashed, and I had the proper firmware. And so here we see the logs in my thing here. We have to push a button here to make the controller start. And the first log we are seeing are coming from the dedicated Wi-Fi task, for example, trying to connect to my controller. So it is not started yet. It should be in a few seconds. In the meantime, I will try to open a browser and access nbc.local/admin. So this is a web page hosted on the controller. We see that the buzzer has managed to connect, and so we have some logs from my JSON parsing module here, telling that it has received some patterns command. And so I will try to show at the same time, if I resume a game here and I try to pair the button, you will see that when I press the button, there are multiple things happening on the buzzer side. The buzzer has sent an identify message. and we have received in turn some specific pattern. Please start doing a wave pattern so that the team knows about that the buzzer is ready. And so from there, we can start to play. And thanks to this whole tooling, I can monitor finally and debug finally all the messages exchanged between my buzzer and the controller. So that's it for the demo. We won't have time to play a whole game, obviously. To close on this, I have an MVP working. There's a few things that I want to clarify on this project. The binary is quite fat currently, and that's a shame for an OSTD program. Improve Rust idiomatic use, error management and all. And yeah. If you are interested in the project, you have the GitHub link here. Do not hesitate to take a look, to criticize the code, or to send PS. Thank you.